Senior Focus. Welcome everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie. I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. And I have with me in the studio Fiona Tunnis. And Fiona is a physio and she is the director of a new company, Inesio, that was set up when Mercy Parklands closed earlier this year. So Inesio is a healthcare charitable trust set up with Fiona and one of her former colleagues from Mercy Parklands. So she's a specialist in elder care, and in particular, she has focused this year on ageing in place, the concept and the research about it, and uncovering the hidden needs for our rapidly growing ageing senior population. So welcome, Fiona.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here today. And we've got lots of shared knowledge, so it's exciting to be able to discuss things with you.
And I was very taken with Fiona's recent presentation at the Seniors Summit. So on the strength of hearing that, I felt it was really very important that we have you on air and have your information out there and talked about more widely. So thank you for coming in, Fiona.
You're very welcome.
Great. Ageing in place is a nice to have, but not many people seem to really get it in terms of what structures do we need, what is really, really critically important. And I guess it's fairly obvious if you want to cater for preschoolers that you need different size toilets and you need, you know, a central place where they can all come together and socialise and so on. And so people are familiar with early childhood education and what that looks like and the transitions from that to school and so on. Transitions for seniors are a bit different because the population is so varied, the needs are so varied, and there are a number of transitions that seniors go through from the mid-50s into the 60s, and then in the late 60s there's a kind of reviewing of what they might face in the next decade, and then there's the 80-plus, which is different again. And when I look at 80-year-olds, I see people who are out to be champion runners and participate in sport, and really they're up there. Their hearts are just as good as many 40-year-olds or better.
And the desire.
And the desire to be champions.
Absolutely.
Is very great. On the other hand, there are other people who can barely get their toe out of bed. So I'd like you to talk about the concept of ageing in place and how it's seen by professionals and advocates.
Sure. I think we started some research in this area through the CMA, which you know of, and that's community services in Auckland North from the Harbour Bridge up to the Hibiscus Coast. And that's about day centres. So we had a grant, Inesio got a grant to do some research in that area around what was available in the community for seniors. So my colleague Helen Del Monte, she did a lot of that. She led the project, actually, and I assisted her. So she did a lot of research, talking to people. We both went and visited some of the day centres run by CMA. There are eight centres in the north of Auckland. And then we researched what else was available in the community. And there's many and varied services for day centres. Some provide services for people all day. Some are just for a short period of time. Some you pay for. Some are not so expensive. And it's varied. So it took quite a lot of work to get all that information together so we could come back to the CMA Association and tell them what's out there, what are people wanting, what could possibly be another way of looking about what's available. We ran a couple of, it was three forums in the community. So we got the local people's voice on this about what they were wanting from seniors who were working in that space, who were volunteering in day centres, who were driving people to, picking them up from home, dropping them off to different centres. And it was a wonderful experience to hear a large group of people from various backgrounds saying and explaining what is how they see their future and what they're wanting for their own community. The project was called Age in Place Community Assessment. It's well known that most people want to age in place, and that means continue doing what they love doing, being with the people they love, being supportive, and also being vibrant in their own communities. And that's ideal, and that's what most of us would want. However, when we get to be older adults, sometimes we are unable to have all of that. So we need to look at what is available and what is needed in the communities.
Yes, and I do understand that as well as having a rapidly growing ageing population, we have a reasonably speedy dwindling population of specialists, because the number of people who have specialist care in the area of aged care is actually seemingly on the decrease, while the population is actually increasing.
Yes, we have lost around 1,200 aged care beds in New Zealand. That's a lot. It's becoming more expensive. It's not well funded. And despite the wish for most people to not go into care, we're going to need beds as our population grows. We know what's happening with the population, and it's called an explosion. I don't like to use negative terms around ageing. I think there's so much narrative using words like burden, etc. We need to think of it as an opportunity. So if we can improve the services in the community, provide services for families, who many families are looking for day centres where they know their loved ones are going to be happy, cared for, respected. Because the thing is, with an ageing population, we've got people living into their 90s still in the communities, and some of their children are in their 70s, probably not working, but even so may have their own health issues. So it's quite a complex concept to try and address.
Yes, there is also, as well as a staffing issue, whether that's at the nursing level or whether that's at the specialist level, there's also, as you point out, a shortage of infrastructure, of the beds and of actual facilities to run activities in, because many of the activities that are running, they're not in purpose-built, well-designed places at all. And so looking ahead, it's a bit disturbing to know that it's possible many community facilities may disappear from our communities in the next 5 years, given the financial burdens that council has, and the fact that there are a lot of facilities that are underutilised at the community level, and they're needing a lot of maintenance, which the council doesn't have the money for. So we've got a number of issues that are in the melting pot.
Yeah, so just continuing with the domino effect, we know that there's a shortage of beds in aged care. It's happening all the time. A lot of facilities are closing. Chronically underfunded. It's very expensive to run hospital level of care facilities. And we're anticipating that the need for aged care beds will rise from about 40,800 to 54,000 by 2030. So that's not far away. So we need to consider those things when we're talking about ageing in place, and if you can't age in place. Because age in place implies that you're staying in your own community around the people that you want to be living with. As the population ages, unfortunately, many people will have a disability associated with that. And that may mean that might be dementia, it may be heart, it may be many things, but it would make it more difficult to stay in the community you would need a lot of assistance, medical assistance, home care assistance, etc. So all of those factors are coming into play about what's required for our ageing in place population.
Yes, and I understand that it's still cheaper to keep somebody in their own home by providing certain kinds of assistance than it is to have them transferred to a hospital bed or a facility where they're in care.
The thing is, we need the staff in the community who are qualified and able to provide the care required. So it becomes quite a difficult, well, a line, I suppose. Where does that line, is it blurred? Is it very definitive? So we know, though, with certain types of disabilities, in inverted commas, and medical needs, it's very difficult to be cared for in the community.
And with this research that you were engaged in, did you get a clear picture from people about what changes they want to see, those who are actually working in aged care, those who are delivering services? What did they see?
We identified key findings. There were six themes to the findings. Hmm. One theme was we need more services. Because of the aged care crisis, ageing population increasing in people living with dementia and the reduction of aged care beds, as I've mentioned, we've got ageism still a big issue in communities and about older people not being valued. I talked about the narrative of the burden of ageing rather than the opportunity of ageing and limited community services, and that puts further pressure on health services, for example, for GP practices. Another theme was the ongoing barriers. Services are limited. Community services are limited for the frail elderly. Transport is an issue. We rely currently on volunteer workforce, and that's becoming an outdated entity because the workforce of volunteers is ageing as well. There's waiting lists for most things now, from NASC assessment, even to get into a daycare centre. And there's some community exercise programs, but mostly you've got to get yourself to those or someone needs to take you to those. So there's a lot of people missing out on that activity, which also has a lot to do with your well-being. Another theme was knowledge of what is available in the community is variable and it's not well accessed by older people. So community directories are not current. Older people may not have digital access. We know 27% of New Zealanders are not online. There's many and varied services, and most people don't know what is right for them. It's hard for families to disseminate what they can find, what information they can find, and is this the right place for my parent to be going to?
Yes, this particular issue about lack of information has come up at a number of conferences and summits, at the Gerontology Conference, at the Seniors Summit, and various forums throughout the year. And Age Concern and Grey Power are very concerned about this issue of the lack of information. And I gave it some thought, and it seems to me that there is a parallel with what has happened in family violence circles. In that sector, the need for information became so apparent that when people stepped up or tried to step up with advocacy, they just didn't have the facts or the grasp of how to produce a more succinct picture of what was going on and what wasn't going on and what needed to change. And so a clearinghouse was set up for information, and it became a very vital part of the strategy to change things about family violence in our society. And it's occurred to me that I think in aged care we're at a similar place.
I think so. And that came out in the forums too about people accessing information. It's currently quite difficult to find what, if, for example, there is day centres set up like CMA who provide short term, 2.5 hours to 3 hours of community activities. So, and they're usually people who are isolated or living alone or maybe living with their family, but the family's working. So transport's required to get people from home to the facility, either by taxi, which CMA funded, or by volunteers. So that's one aspect. But what if they suddenly, their dementia might go from mild dementia to moderate dementia? Can they be catered for in the community? There's still some stigma in the community about dementia, about people not wanting to engage with others with maybe moderate dementia. So if you're looking for somewhere to go, if you don't have confidence or you're lonely or you feel helpless, like a lot of people are, loneliness is a big issue with ageing, then they may not have the confidence to seek or know where to look or even know how to navigate a computer to search for what could be available in the community. So we're finding increased reports of isolation and loneliness. Yeah. Mm. People over the age of 80, 50% of them report being lonely.
I've noticed. Yeah,
that's a huge number.
It is. Mm. It's colossal. And I've noticed lately, just out and about shopping on buses and so on, that I've come across more people with dementia. And one particular gentleman who was obviously quite well educated and spoke very well. And when he started a conversation with me on the bus, it became apparent that he thought he was going to Browns Bay, but he'd just got on the bus from the Browns Bay shops. And I thought, oh, this is a really sad case. He seemed to be travelling with another gentleman, but I wasn't quite sure of the relationship. But because I had a busy day on, I had to get off the bus and go to deliver something. I wasn't in a position to follow it up. But I did feel for him because I thought he obviously thinks he's going to Browns Bay, but he's actually going to Constellation bus station. It was all a bit much. But these sort of situations crop up again and again, where people are out in the community moving about, but they're not at all sure where they are or what they're really doing.
Yes, I have heard of those instances. I think probably they know they want to get on the bus and they know where they're going. It's just that executive function to get exactly where they need to be from A to Z. Mm. So, yeah, I think that's not an uncommon situation, I wouldn't think.
Mm.
And most people seek community, they seek companionship. They want to be still the person that they are inside. I think that's something we must always remember. It doesn't matter how old you are, there's still this incredible person there with a long life history and so much information and meaningful things to share. I think that can be forgotten sometimes with ageing. We must not ever forget that.
Hmm. Yes, I appreciate very much hearing what you're saying, Fiona, because some people tend to think it's an all or nothing thing and they find it hard to value people who have dementia.
This ageism theme coming in that regard. That's right. And I think we need to address that. As a population, as a community, I think it's really important that we start to address that. It's important in all aspects of our life, whether you're living in the community or you are in an aged care facility.
One of the things that's cropped up in discussions at a number of these forums that I've attended is the housing crisis and how the housing crisis for seniors is of a different order. And a lot of it is hidden from view. It doesn't get part of the discussion. It's not on the political policy tables.
No, you're right. There hasn't been much discussion at all around that. And it's probably still quite hidden, really. We know there's lots of services providing units for people who are living on their own. There are also many, many aged or older adults living in the family home or an attachment to the family home. So, and we probably need to delve deeper into that aspect before we can even address what's happening.
Overseas, there are some quite interesting developments where councils in the UK have decided that they will advance bridging finance to people so they can, their house can be modified, or so they can move out of their house and move into something else and not have the tremendous burden of trying to do all of that without the capital, because of course at the moment banks don't loan to seniors.
No, they definitely don't. That's right. Yeah, there's a lot of amazing things happening overseas. I know in Denmark there's a big push for intergenerational living, where purpose-built, their accommodation, where you've got young families and a daycare centre, you've got middle-aged people living, and you've got seniors or elders living in that community as well, with a park and a playground and access to public transport. Australia's starting to move into that space a little bit. I heard the other day that there's a few places starting to have a daycare centre within an aged care facility, which is addressing that intergenerational, or the joy of that intergenerational living. So we've got a long way to go in thinking in that way. I was speaking to some elders at the Senior Summit, actually, and they were very keen to have some land where they can build small homes but live maybe six or seven homes within that piece of land. So you've got a community and you can look out for each other and you can share costs and you can share meals, and that seemed to be something that was quite popular with some of the seniors I spoke to. They were going to look into that a little bit further, but I don't know too much about what's happening in regard to at a larger scale in New Zealand at this stage.
Yes, there would be advantages if, for example, council had a friendly policy about helping people come together, even find other people that wanted to do the similar sort of thing, because quite often it's quite difficult to advertise and find people who are of like mind without being bothered by people who want to sell you things and unleashing a whole lot of things you don't want.
I think the more we talk about it and the more we come together and we have more forums and we let our seniors and our elders tell us what they're looking for, what's important to them, how they would like to see things going forward, I think that's important to have a voice, for them to have a voice. Then planning can start. I don't think it's going to be helpful if you and I get together and say, I think this was what we'll do. We need to know what's the important thing for our elders in the community and their families.
I think there were some very good initiatives 3 or 4 years back. There were forums started, and in the lead up to getting our city to become an age-friendly city, we did have those forums. And in fact, one of the leading lights of those forums was the woman who was behind this building that we're in the studio of. And I think a lot of hope was generated at that time. And then COVID came along and people stopped meeting face-to-face. So since COVID, we have had a few international conferences in Wellington and one here. We've had some seminars and forums that have been organised by universities, but we really haven't had the community grassroots forums that we used to have. We haven't had those yet.
Right. Well, when we organised some community forums in the north, in Auckland North, because the majority of older adults living in Auckland live on that, in the isthmus, out by Howick and then on the coast from North Shore up to Arewa and Warkworth. So they were really helpful. People of all ages, as I mentioned before, volunteers, people actually working in GP practices, some health practitioners actually doing quite a lot of work. But once again, you can do that for the people that are enrolled in your practice, but if you're not enrolled in a GP practice, you're not going to have access to that, those extra services. So things that were identified were the issue with volunteers. We need to move beyond that, probably looking forward. And they want a central hub. They'd love to have a central hub where lots of people could come, you could join services and have a large place to come to, and you could have breakout areas for different activities perhaps. So that was something in the long term that the community felt would be a really helpful thing.
Yes, the central hub concept.
A desire. They desired that as a long-term strategy.
Yeah. Mm. I think it's very important. I mean, the one-stop shop for youth and youth services has been a feature of a lot of community development work in a number of cities and towns in New Zealand, and it's well accepted that this is what youth need. But it's a situation where we've got limited resources for facilities and for upgrading facilities, and the pot is not deep enough at the moment in Auckland to cover a lot of the infrastructure we need. But social infrastructure we need to invest in just as much as pipes.
We need to invest in people.
That's right. And so the hub concept, if it's well designed, you can have sections of the hub that are for youth, or days that are for youth and so on, and sections that are for older people on certain days as well. And I think that design can be done. And also housing can be incorporated into it. I've seen hubs overseas where housing is on lower ground levels. There's housing for seniors, and on the third level there's housing for families.
Mm.
And offices and services on the second level with lifts. So there's lots of possibilities.
I think, yes, and you're sort of describing a change of focus, aren't you?
Mm.
That's right. So with that, of course, if you have a collaborative community model as a favourable long-term approach, you would still need to have some qualitative and methodology behind that to ensure that it is what's required and you are achieving something and there is positive feedback and there's benefits. So we need to have all of that infrastructure around it in order for it to be sustainable.
Well, we need to use an evidence-based approach. We need to have the best models that are out there currently, no matter what country they're in. We need to put a New Zealand lens over them so that they're applicable to the different cultures that we have here and the way that the central hub would operate.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, that's a shift in focus and it's making a decision about that. It's not going away. We need to address it. And our older population deserve the best end of life. They deserve the best services. They've contributed to our communities their whole life. I think it's something that we need to fight for.
Thank you, Fiona. And so well said. So thank you, everyone. And we'll be back again next Sunday. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25pm on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus, and do note Senior Focus is one word.
As I try to, you like this growing, never dreading doubt.